This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome to America's Voice for Energy. I'm Marita Noon, Executive Director of Energy Makes America Great and a companion educational organization, the Citizens Alliance for Responsible Energy. Each week, I'm excited to bring to you a variety of experts on the news of the day, the energy news of the day. And I take each week's energy news and I write a weekly column that's published first on Breitbart.com and many other websites and newspapers throughout the country. This week, the energy news that I chose to write about was the passage of a new law in Texas. That law was known as HB 40 or the Denton Fracking Ban. My column is titled, Another Domino Falls for the Anti-Fossil Fuel Crusader. Each week I try to be kind of a cheerleader for energy, present some positive news. And certainly the passage of HB 40 in Texas is good news for those who believe, as I do, that energy makes America great. This week I'm excited to have a variety of experts on this topic with us that can talk to us about what happened on the ground with the Denton fracking ban, what's happened in other states, and what's preemption as a bigger issue, especially for those of us who believe in limited government and the free market. But first, we're going to talk with Ed Ireland. And Ed is the executive director of the Barnett Shale Energy Education Council. And Ed has had firsthand experience on the ground in the Denton, Texas area, which is the area that kind of spurred this whole passage of HB 40. So, Ed, we're excited to have you with us today on America's Voice for Energy. Thanks for taking your time to join us.
Thank you, Maria. I'm glad to be here.
So give us a little bit of background on what this whole HB 40 is and why this is even an issue, because certainly no one would think that in Texas, the most oil-friendly of all states in the United States, Why would a fracking ban be passed in Texas?
Well, you certainly make a good point. And the ban on hydraulic fracturing that was passed in Denton by the voters definitely was the first of its kind in Texas, and
it obviously got the legislature's attention. It scared some people in Texas, I think.
Well, it did. I think a lot of people were worried that could become a pattern, or you know, that Denton ban could be repeated in other towns and cities across the state of Texas. But I think really the legislature was really focused on being sure that cities understood the limits of their ordinance or lawmaking capabilities within the state, and the bill then, that HB 40, I think was really conceived to clarify that the state has the authority to regulate oil and gas, and that private property rights are protected by the Texas Constitution.
Yeah, and those are really the two big issues, and you know, I kind of interrupted you there, I'm sorry. So you know, let's go back, if I may, to what was the situation that prompted Denton to ban fracking?
Well, Denton has been a hotbed of activity, if you will, in the anti-drilling area for some years. I served on the City of Denton Gas Task Force in 2012 and 2013 at the city's request. And this task force was there to rewrite or make recommendations on rewriting and beefing up the City of Denton's drilling ordinances. And even at that time, back a few years ago, there was still a very strong sense that at least a small group of residents did not want any drilling activity at all.
And that's kind of par for the course in any population base. You're going to find a small group who is opposed to any sort of industrial activity.
Well, that's right. And this particular group was actually spearheaded by a professor at the University of North Texas and some students at the University of North Texas. And then ultimately they did get some others involved, but it was very much driven by the professors and students at the college there.
And you know, what was the big issue for them in Denton? Why did this become an issue there?
Well,
other than just that they don't like fracking, other than that they're just anti-fossil fuel.
Well, I think it definitely stems from an anti-fossil fuel philosophy, and that, of course, got translated into really not wanting drilling to occur within the city limits. It did get translated to a ban on hydraulic fracturing because I believe that their attorneys told them that they could not ban drilling in the state of Texas, but at least they thought they could ban hydraulic fracturing. And since that would be a de facto ban on drilling, they felt that they had the legal basis to proceed. So it did become a ban on hydraulic fracturing, but, of course, in effect, it was a ban on drilling.
Now, let me ask you, you said there were attorneys that told them they couldn't ban drilling, but they could ban hydraulic fracturing. Who were those attorneys, and what were they basing that decision on?
There was an opinion issued by a law firm in Pennsylvania for that CELDEF group, and that was the basis for their crafting of their petition that eventually went to the voters. That was a ban on hydraulic fracturing.
And, of course, I wanted to go to that specifically because CELDEF, or the Community Legal Environmental Defense Fund, was active in Mora County, New Mexico, and there they actually did do a drilling ban. And earlier this year, a judge declared that was unconstitutional, although it was widely believed that a judge would make such a decision before the judgment actually came down. So I guess I'm wondering, and you probably don't know, just be a guess, if Mora County's situation is part of what made CELDEF say, oh, you can't do a drilling ban, but you can do a fracking ban. Do you have any clue?
I think that's definitely a possibility. It could have been just something they learned, although they never stated as such. But that seemed to be why it was a ban on hydraulic fracturing and not a ban on drilling. It was really just kind of a cute trick, if you will, of a way they thought they could get around it. But, of course, that didn't turn out that way, and then HB 40 was passed to deal with it.
Yeah, and HB 40, as I alluded to in the title of my column, is really just the most recent domino to fall in the anti-fossil fuel crusade, because we've got some history of other situations before that, correct?
Well, that's correct, and I think, again, there was some concern that the Denton ban might get replicated in other parts of Texas. But again, I think it was really the Texas legislature's goal to clarify that cities cannot pass illegal bans, which is what the ban on hydraulic fracturing was, or which was a ban on drilling, because it impeded private property rights. It basically was a taking of royalty owners, mineral owners' property, that property being their minerals and the right to their minerals, and a ban on drilling is a taking of private property rights without compensation, and I think the legislators wanted to clarify that cities cannot do that. They cannot pass illegal laws.
You know, and I appreciate you bringing that up. We're talking with Ed Ireland, Executive Director of the Barnett Shale Energy Education Council, specifically about the fracking ban that the city of Denton passed last November, and then HB 40 that Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed just last week. And Ed, you brought up the private property rights, and I'm glad you did, because that's something, you know, when I write a weekly column, as I do, I have a word count battle every week, and because of my word count battle, I just didn't even go into the private property rights issue. But we've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Can you expound on why this is for people who don't understand mineral rights and so forth, why this is a private property rights taking?
Sure. Mineral rights are private property just as much as surface rights to land. And, you know, the United States is really the only country in the world where people can own their mineral rights. In all other countries around the world, the government, the king, the queen, whatever, owns the mineral rights, not people. But in the United States, private property owners can own their mineral rights, and that is that they own the minerals all the way to the center of the earth. And that's property. And the Texas Constitution specifically recognizes mineral rights as actually taking precedent to surface rights. So if the mineral rights have ever been severed from the surface rights in Texas, the mineral owner takes precedent over the surface owner, meaning someone can still come in and drill their mineral rights even though they don't own the surface, as long as they own the mineral rights. So it's a very important property right in the United States as a whole, but it's the Texas Constitution says it is a very important property right in the state of Texas.
Yeah, and sometimes that's hard to understand. I recall when I first got involved in energy advocacy, I was at a gathering and there were some people there from the Fort Worth area. I don't recall exactly where they were. And because of where they lived, I assumed that they would be on the same side of the issue as I was. And they, when I brought it up, they were not, and I was surprised. And they were kind of negative because they live in the Barnett Shale area. And people have come in with, you know, the mineral rights and are doing drilling, and there's trucks and noise, and they were not happy. And I said, well, you know, who you should be unhappy with is your realtor, because your realtor should have explained when you bought that house that you didn't own the mineral rights, just the surface rights. And so there is some confusion in this country on that issue.
Well, there is, and it's certainly in the Barnett Shale area here. Early on, people didn't know if they owned their mineral rights or not. I would say now that's pretty much a universal question.
Yeah.
That is asked when people are engaging in a transaction of property. Do I get the mineral rights? Am I buying the mineral rights?
Yeah. Well, Ed Ireland from the Barnett Shale Energy Education Council, I appreciate you joining us today on America's Voice for Energy. How can people find out more about the Barnett Shale Energy Education Council?
They can go to our website, which is BSEEC.org. That stands for Barnett Shale Energy Education Council, BSEEC.org. And we also are on Twitter, at BSEEC. And so either way, people can find us. And if they get on the website, they can also ask questions if they don't find the answer to their question already on the website.
Great, Ed. Thanks for joining us on America's Voice for Energy. We'll be right back.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Voice for Energy. This week, we're talking about preemption. What that means is when a state, specifically an oil and gas development, says regulation of oil and gas is the state's domain, jurisdiction, not that of the municipalities. We've seen preemption issues take place in my home state of New Mexico, in Ohio, in Colorado, and in Texas. But now we're going to talk with James Roller, who is the VP of Legislative Affairs for the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association. And we're going to talk about what's happening in Oklahoma on this front. In my column this week on Breitbart.com, I addressed that Oklahoma has passed a preemption bill in both houses and that we're expecting Governor Mary Fallon to sign it at any time. So we're going to talk with James about what's going on in Oklahoma. If you're interested in checking out my column, you can find it on Breitbart.com. Just Google my name, Marita Noon, and the column title, which is Another Domino Falls for Anti-Fossil Fuel Crusaders. James, welcome to America's Voice for Energy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me on today to discuss this important issue.
Yeah, it is a really important issue, but it's a kind of a complicated one to understand. When I wrote my column, which I usually write, sadly, on the weekend, because everything I write is very news-based, and it publishes, my weekly column publishes on Monday morning, and so I don't write too far in advance because I want to have kind of the most current news. But I say that because when I wrote over the weekend, I didn't have any Oklahoma oil and gas experts to reach out to. But it's my understanding that Oklahoma has not had any preemption issues like an anti-fracking bill or an oil and gas drilling ban like they had in Mora County, New Mexico. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think it is important to say that, you know, the bill that we have in the legislature now was really driven, though, out of two localized efforts, both in two of our college cities, Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Norman, Oklahoma, that are in the process currently of developing their own regulatory procedures, and in many cases trying to portray that as just regulations, but they sure seem to look like efforts to create some type of ban in and around their cities.
You know, I live in New Mexico, and in Santa Fe, New Mexico, this was early on, before this whole anti-fracking movement got the momentum that it seems to have gathered, although I think its failure has also gained a lot of momentum. But in Santa Fe, New Mexico, oh, I've kind of lost track now, but maybe 6-7 years ago, I've been involved in this line of work now for 8 years, and it was early in my experience with the energy industry that Santa Fe County, New Mexico, passed some really onerous regulations that really are a de facto ban, but they don't quite go that far. And I, you know, this is probably outside of your expertise, James, but I'm wondering if now with this movement in this direction, if some of the oil companies might come back at Santa Fe County with a lawsuit and if there might be some different outcomes, because I know Texas HB 40, known as the Denton Fracking Bill, you know, says that cities can regulate some surface things, but not so much that it essentially bans oil and gas activity. Do you have any opinion on that? I know I'm kind of outside of your scope there.
No, I do think that's something that it could occur or be challenged in the future in Santa Fe and other areas of the country where they've dealt with a similar issue. You know, and that really, I think, highlights the need for legislation like we've drafted here in the state of Oklahoma. And it often gets proclaimed, you know, kind of as you mentioned, as the, you know, Denton preemption or the Oklahoma preemption bills. Really what it is about clarifying some of the regulatory boundaries for oil and gas development. We still believe that the cities They have a role in protecting their citizens. And so, you know, our bill kind of does similar to what I think it, you said it was HB 40 does in Texas.
Yes.
Which is to really kind of outline the areas that would protect general health and safety. So they can talk about rules and regulations concerning the roads, concerning traffic, concerning noise and odors, or fencing, if you will, around sites to protect the public. We think those are good areas to do that. But really, in this case, you're at the end of the day, you're getting down to what is the appropriate regulatory body to regulate a highly technical industry. And at the end of the day, we believe, especially in Oklahoma, where we've had our Oklahoma Corporation Commission, you know, in service for probably at least the last 100 years here in the state, that they still are the professionals and the regulatory body that we should be working through.
Yeah, you know, it is a highly technical process and a highly technical industry, and the individual cities just don't have the expertise or the budget to bring in the expertise, or frankly, probably even the need to have their own individual experts, because there's not probably enough. So it doesn't really make sense for the cities to be really replicating what the state is doing.
Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time in a previous lifetime before my role here and did some work writing some Sydney ordinances at one particular time with a very pro-oil and gas city. They just wanted to put some general guidelines around their operations there in the city. And they worked very, very well with us. And during our discussions with their city managers and attorneys, it became very apparent, and their mayor there of the city, it became very apparent that they didn't fully understand, you know, like in Texas, you have the Texas Railroad Commission, and Oklahoma, you have the Oklahoma Corporation Commission. They didn't understand the full breadth of what they cover and the technical expertise in which they work under in order to regulate this industry. And so in that particular case, that city ends up, you know, really backing up and realizing they don't have the expertise to do it. And I think that's the case in most areas. I know that may not be the case in all, but in most cities.
Yeah.
At least the cities where or states where major oil and gas development has been ongoing for some time, the regulatory body is already well established and well developed.
Yeah, and especially in states where there's not as much, like, say, Ohio, the cities certainly wouldn't have the capacity to handle that. And that's an interesting perspective you brought up, James, because that's something I didn't address at all in my column, is why shouldn't cities regulate that? And the technical expertise is really a big part of that.
Yeah, and there's very few cities, I would think, in the United States today that have a lot of free cash flow to go out and replicate the regulatory process. And so it would really, you know, draw into question why you would replicate the same services. Because my next question would be, it's not like the Oklahoma Corporation Commission or Texas Railroad Authority would then, you know, just go hands-off in a city because the city wanted to claim that as their jurisdiction. So that is definitely something that was always interesting to me during the discussions is how that they would think that for some reason your state regulatory body then would then go hands off in a municipality.
Yeah, now it's, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned, or at the beginning I said, so Oklahoma so far has not had like a ballot initiative to ban fracking, or as in New Mexico, in Mora County, where they banned all drilling for hydrocarbons, and I've been very involved in that issue. But you're saying that in a couple of the college communities, did I hear correctly, that they're kind of talking about some of this?
Yeah, our two major university cities, Stillwater, Oklahoma, the home of Oklahoma State University, and Norman, Oklahoma, the home of Oklahoma University, both at their city council level right now are looking at new regulations to start regulating oil and gas activity around the cities.
And both of them have current oil and gas activity, is that correct?
That's correct. In Norman, it's a little bit different situation. You have some smaller vertical and horizontal wells being drilled in and around the city of Norman, Oklahoma. And then playing different limestone formations, pay zone areas there. And then up around Stillwater, you have a number of drillers pursuing Woodford and Mississippi Lime drilling opportunities in that area.
So do you find that it's the, you know, is this something that's being driven from within the community, or is it something that's being driven from outside?
It really appears in both of these cases to be driven really from inside very small internal groups where you have, you know, these are both fairly large cities as a whole, and you have a small band of, and it's not that they're, I'm not trying to diminish the significance here, but a very small group of concerned citizens who spend too much time reading other newspaper articles and things that they think could potentially maybe someday, if they're standing on their head, type stuff that's going to happen to them, and they kind of band together and start to create a fuss, and they all have the right to, you know, to express their opinions and go about that in a civil way. The problem we've had, though, is as we continue to deal with that group, and you know, you start to talk about the facts of the issue, they seem I don't know what the right word is, very objectionable or dismissive, I guess would probably be the right word, dismissive of the overall scientific facts based around oil and gas development.
Yeah, they've made up their mind ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, and so I don't, some people...
Don't distract me with the facts.
Yeah, and it's more of, and what I've told some others, it really comes down to, if you're morally object, if you have a moral... you know, objection to the use of fossil fuels, there's nothing I can do probably to change your opinion of that, but just acknowledge that that's what it is, and it's not a fact-based issue for you.
We don't only have like a minute left. Have you had any success with that argument?
Very little. you know, facts don't tend to matter when you have hysteria.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just scare tactics on the other side. And so, but we're very aware. We're trying to educate and do all we can to ease those fears and provide the information and data from our organization side that we can in order to help those individuals.
Yep, and that's my goal and what I'm doing with this little radio show and with my weekly column. I'm out there talking to the public, communicating about energy on a daily basis with radio interviews and my writing and my speaking, so I appreciate your being willing to join me. We do still have, I'm sorry, I was a little off on my timing a few moments ago. We do have now less than 1 minute. So when do we expect Governor Fallon to sign this bill?
We'd really, I mean, you kind of mentioned it earlier, but any day, we thought she would sign it either today or tomorrow, just probably depending on if she's in the state and sitting down and watching those bills. So we're watching
inevitable.
That. She just wrapped up the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. It was here in Oklahoma City last week, so she probably has not had a chance to sit down and review some of this stuff, but we would imagine her signature will occur on that bill within the coming days.
So it's essentially a done deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great. James Roller, thank you for joining me today on America's Voice for Energy. James Roller, Vice President for Legislative Affairs with the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association. We'll be right back on America's Voice for Energy.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gannot. Thank you, God bless Patriot Conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to America's Voice for Energy. Today we're talking about a really important issue, the issue of preeminence is what we call it. And what that means is that the states have the jurisdiction over the municipalities, especially regarding oil and gas development. This conversation was prompted because in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott just signed into law HB 40, which is what's known as the Denton Fracking Bill, that says that the municipalities do not have the jurisdiction over oil and gas development in their communities. Now, they can regulate some surface issues, so they are not eliminating the local government's participation or their ability to regulate, but they're not eliminating it, but they are limiting it to certain areas, as we've discussed in our previous segments. Now, in New Mexico, in my home state of New Mexico, was one of the first places that this battle played out. And I'm excited to have with us today one of the people on the front lines of that battle in New Mexico, and that is Corrine Foster, who is an attorney and the executive director of the Independent Petroleum Association of New Mexico. And she's going to tell us kind of what happened in New Mexico, what the courts decided, and what the legislature has done in response to that. So, Corrine, welcome back to America's Voice for Energy.
Thanks for having me, Marita.
So, you know, Mora County was kind of at one of the regions at the forefront of this battle, as they bragged about being the first county in the United States to ban not just fracking, as most other places have done, but to ban all drilling of hydrocarbons. Tell us from a legal angle what happened from there.
Well, you're correct. The Mora Citizens' Rights Ordinance, which was drafted by a group out of Pennsylvania, they came to Mora County, which is a rather large county in New Mexico in geographic size, but very small in population. And they convinced a three-person county commission that a ban on hydrocarbons was necessary. This is a frontier area in New Mexico. In New Mexico, we have two large basins. We have the San Juan Basin up in the northwest, and we have the Permian Basin down in the southeast. Mora County is kind of north central, more on the east side of the state, and it was considered a frontier area. However, we had a very large...
let me stop you for just a sec. It was considered a frontier area, just for our listeners, because there was no current oil and gas development there. Is that correct?
That's right, but there was a substantial amount of leasing that had been occurring because this multinational company had decided that the geology would be good for traditional deep gas drilling for natural gas. So some leasing had occurred, but no drilling had occurred. The county decided to pass this ordinance that would ban all oil and gas activity in and through the county. My association, the Independent Petroleum Association, partnered up with several landowners who obviously would have benefited from natural gas drilling in their county, as well as some producers, and we filed suit in federal court. The lawsuit that we filed was a violation of our civil rights because the ordinance said a couple of things. One was that corporations had no rights under law. They had no First Amendment or Fifth Amendment due process rights and therefore would not be able to operate in the county. Obviously, a trade association, one of my main jobs is speaking out to the public, an ordinance impinging on my First Amendment rights would be found unconstitutional, which is what Judge Browning ultimately found. He found that this ordinance that was a complete ban on all activities was a violation of the state's right to limit the county from moving forward, and therefore the county could not limit anybody who had any property rights or an association or corporation from moving forward. He basically said that we had no, that the ordinance gave us no due process, no ability to appeal those limitations, and no ability to basically do anything in the county. And so therefore, the federal judge found that ordinance was completely unconstitutional. Again, as you said, Marita, you're correct in that this is a complete ban. It was not just a ban on fracking activities.
Now, the reality is in other municipalities where they have done fracking bans, they are, in essence, a ban on drilling because, for example, in Denton, Texas, they're in the Barnett Shale, which requires fracking to extract the resource. But Mora County did go a step beyond. But do you think that the judge would have come down with the same decision if it was a fracking ban?
Well, we have another county next door that effectively has a fracking ban. Santa Fe County effectively has a fracking ban. And what they have done is created the administrative hurdles so high in order to actually get to be able to even drill, spud your well, and ultimately frack it, that it's a ban.
It's interesting you bring up Santa Fe County. How many years ago did Santa Fe County put in those ordinances now?
That was in 2008.
Okay, I've talked about it on some of the other segments, and I've said I think it's, you know, 6-7 years ago that happened. But it's interesting to me because what Santa Fe County did was before all of these other issues have come to the forefront and repeatedly been shot down in court. So I'm wondering if specifically the Texas law says that a municipality may not have regulations that, and this is my words, not the legal words, but that they cannot be so onerous as to be an effective ban. And that's really what Santa Fe County did. So I've been kind of wondering if some of the lease mineral owners in Santa Fe County might now, with this body of case law, if that's the right term, I'm not the lawyer, if they might consider coming back to Santa Fe. Have you given that any thought?
Yes, we have. And in fact, this past legislative session, we sponsored a bill, and the House Whip, Representative Nate Gentry, carried a bill for us that would have done exactly that. It was a preemption bill here in New Mexico that, very similar to the Texas bill, would have allowed the counties to have some say on surface use issues, but it would not have allowed them to prevent us from getting permits when we had a valid permit from the Old Conservation Division. The idea here is that in these New Mexico counties, that don't have the resources to hire petroleum engineers, that don't know how to operate oil and gas facilities because they're more worried with traditional zoning and police powers, things like septic tanks and subdivisions and all that. That's the expertise of the counties. They don't know how to operate oil and gas. And so the idea with the preemption bill was, you know what, let the state do its job because the state has the expertise to grant permits. Counties cannot grant permits. However, counties can have a position when it comes to surface issues, things like light. How long are you going to keep your lights on at your facility? If you're creating a lot of noise or dust, there could be some noise barriers that might be required. We drew the line at allowing counties to tell us where we actually had to physically site our wells, and that was mainly because we site our wells because of the geology, which is a downhole thing. So
right. People don't understand that drillers don't have a choice really in where they drill. They have to drill where the resource is.
Exactly. And the environmental community is basically saying, oh, no, you can place your well wherever you'd like because of horizontal drilling now. You know, you could drill to where you need to go. And that is only partially accurate. Yes, we can have horizontal drilling, but, because of the topography and everything, you'd rather put your well on a location that has, you know, soft earth as opposed to on top of a rock. The argument that the environmentalists are bringing in terms of where we should be able to site our wells is kind of ridiculous. They really don't understand, you know, that it takes it's a very scientific process that we use in order to actually site our wells. There's a lot of factors that are taken into account. We can move our wells a little bit, but not you know, 5 miles, like what some of the environmentalists want, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in the Santa Fe County Ordinance and another county adopted the Santa Fe Ordinance, and they actually initially had a 5 mile setback because of that exact argument. And it's this whole preemption argument is really unfortunate, because what's happening is that it is, at least in New Mexico, it's the wildcatting or frontier counties that are putting these ordinances in place, and we don't have oil and gas corporations that want to spend the resources to fight them, because there's more profitable plays elsewhere. And so that's why the Santa Fe ordinance has stayed in place as long as it has. I have been told by several county attorneys, even the Mora County attorney told me that he believed that when the Santa Fe ordinance gets challenged, it will be found unconstitutional because those administrative hurdles are so high. You know, if we could get the Texas law passed, or even a version of the New Mexico law that we tried to pass, that commercial reasonableness standard is really important, because what you're looking for is a balance between what is protective of the environment and what is so economically costly that it would prohibit operations. And what Santa Fe and subsequently San Miguel have done is they require you to do 13 different types of studies, climate change, air quality, biology, VEPA-type studies, like required for the federal government, that are so expensive that companies are going to look elsewhere to operate, which is really their goal, right? Not to operate. Right.
So they're trying to stay just inside the law.
Yes, because they don't want to they would lose on a takings claim, right? They would lose legally under law if you're, you know, taking somebody's property right. Then they would lose, and that's effectively what Mora County did, right? They took the leases that even the state trust had in Mora County and said, they're now valueless. So the federal judge came back and said, no, you can't do that. And so the ordinances that have these administrative requirements and studies that you have to do in order to even be able to submit your permit in the first place tries to skirt around that potential takings claim. But ultimately, if we were to go to court against Santa Fe or San Miguel with a company that wants to operate there, that's exactly the claim that we would make. It's effectively a civil rights claim. It is a takings claim, because the cost of trying to get to the point where you can actually drill your well to determine what your resources look like is so high that effectively it's a taking. Because those studies could cost more than even what the resources value at. You know,
nobody really knows, which is the frontier element of it. Corinne, exactly. We've got about 30 seconds left before we have to end this segment. You've been a great guest. I appreciate your insight. The New Mexico bill did not pass the Senate. Is that correct?
That's correct. It never made it to the Senate. The chairman of the Conservation Committee completely blocked it, would not allow us to have a hearing on the issue.
Any hope for the future?
If we can change the composition of the Senate, yes, and I'm hoping that is going to happen.
Good. All right. Well, I appreciate your time. Corinne Foster from the Independent Petroleum Association of New Mexico, thanks for joining us once again on America's Voice for Energy. We'll be right back.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. The pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Voice for Energy. Today's show has been a great show. I think it's really going to be kind of the preeminent, pun intended, body of information on the subject of preeminence. And this is a kind of sticky issue, especially for those of us who are free government, or excuse me, free market, limited government types, because here we're saying, no, the state needs to have control of these issues rather than the local government. So it's kind of a little bit of a, you know, how do we square this with our ideology? And in preparation for writing this week's column on Texas's House Bill 40, the Denton fracking bill, I did a lot of research on the topic, and I ran across a piece written by John Ike, who is the Director of Energy, Environment, and Agriculture at the American Legislative Exchange Council. And in his piece, he said, well, we haven't addressed this topic specifically. There is some, you know, historic precedents for state control on certain issues. And so I'm delighted to have John back with me again today on America's Voice for Energy. He's joined us previously on another topic, but I'm glad to have his expertise with us today. And in our final segment, we're going to talk about this as kind of a national issue and kind of the rationale behind it. So, John, with that set up, welcome back to America's Voice for Energy.
Thanks, Marita. It's great to be with you again.
So do you agree with my premise that this is kind of a sticky issue for limited government people like myself?
Yeah, I think that you're definitely onto something. You know, the old axiom in politics is that, you know, the government that is best or the government that's most responsive to the people, the government that's closest to the people, that's, you know, certainly there's a lot of, I guess, good thinking behind that. But when it comes to some of these preemption issues, I think the most important thing that we need to remember and keep in the back of our heads is that municipalities are creations of the states. And given that fact, municipalities only have as much authority as states give to them. You know, they're very much like the federal government in that regard. The federal government, as you will recall from your civics classes in high school, was created by the states, and the municipalities are very much the same way. And so theoretically, the federal government, I'm trying not to veer too far off subject here, but theoretically the federal government's powers is what has been explicitly delegated to it by the states, and with municipal governments it's the same way.
Yeah, you know, and I know Greg Abbott was kind of grilled on that subject himself because he's like, well, wait a minute, you're telling the federal government to stay out of your business, and yet you're telling the municipalities that they don't have this right. It's complicated.
Absolutely. But, yeah, again, like I said, the important thing to think about is, and keep in mind is that states are, at least in theory, where you know, the power resides, and they are the ones that delegate power to the federal government and to the municipalities and the county governments and any other political subdivisions within their respective state.
So we really have a state-centric governmental system.
I sound like a broken record. I keep saying in theory, but yes, we're supposed to. But, you know, I'm sure you've documented a lot of, you know, the expansive role that EPA and other federal agencies and the overall bureaucracy are playing. So you kind of wonder if that's still the case as it pertains specifically to the federal government these days.
Yeah, the federal government certainly is involved in a lot of governmental overreach, and that's the exact term that the people who pushed for the Denton fracking ban used when HB 40 was signed in Texas. They called it a legislative overreach and have promised to push back. But I was talking with the gentleman from Oklahoma, from the Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association, as I was talking with James. He brought up an interesting point on this very issue, and that is how complicated regulating oil and gas issues are. And he brought up that he had been involved in writing some city codes at one point in a former part of his life, and they were amazed at how complicated the oil and gas issue was. And basically, the people he was working with in the city acknowledged that they really didn't have the expertise or the budget to bring in the expertise to regulate oil and gas effectively.
That's a great point that you raise. And, you know, of course, preemption is not just used by state governments when it comes to energy production. We've seen it used for a number of other, you know, policy areas such as minimum wage or labor issues or even, you know, regulation of agriculture and that sort of thing. And, you know, the concern, you know, for business is pretty obvious. You know, it is very challenging to, you know, be forced to negotiate a patchwork of local regulations within a particular state. And from the state's perspective as well, you know, if you're specifically looking at Texas, you know, they have reaped the benefits of the oil and gas boom thanks to, you know, the technological advancements associated with hydraulic fracturing and also horizontal drilling. They receive about $6 billion a year, that's billion with a B, in severance tax and production tax revenue, which goes to, you know, provide for all the government services that we expect from states, schools, roads, you know, health and human services, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a vested interest, not just from the you know, the oil and gas industry, but also from, you know, the state of Texas itself to ensure that, you know, fracking can continue to take place within the state as it has for several decades now.
Yeah, you bring up a good point there, because the revenues from that region, Denton, Texas in this case, but there are other situations nationally that we've talked about earlier in the show here, there are the funds from the revenues, the benefit of that activity goes to the state, and then those monies are passed back to the individual communities in the form of school funding, highway funding, a variety of issues. And I know in my state of New Mexico, there has been talk of, in Mora County, where they banned drilling for all hydrocarbons, and of course, as I've already addressed, a federal judge overturned that, declaring it as unconstitutional. But there was talk when Mora County said, okay, we're going to ban all drilling for hydrocarbons in Mora County. There was talk of legislation saying, okay, well, if you have the asset, now it's different if a county doesn't have the assets, but there was talk of saying, okay, if you have the asset and you choose not to develop those assets, then you're not going to get the benefit of the other counties that do develop those assets. Because obviously, particularly when you're talking oil and gas, there are some costs to those counties. The trucks rumbling up and down the road create wear and tear on the roadways. They create truly, I mean, I acknowledge they create an inconvenience to the community of more industrial activity. And so the idea was, if you're not going to, you know, contribute to this, you're not going to get the funding that the other counties contribute. And I talked to the Lieutenant Governor's office about this specifically last year when the Mora County issue was brewing in New Mexico, and he told me, I don't think that legislation will pass, but what may pass is we will give additional highway funding, we will give additional funding to the counties that are bearing the wear and tear of this activity. So rather than taking away funding from counties that don't participate, they might be more apt to give more funding to counties that do. Have you seen that kind of conversation taking place in other states, John?
Well, I mean, if you look at Texas, if you look at the legislative history over the course of this year with the preemption issue in Texas, there was a bill that was floated. Ultimately, it was not the one that was approved by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. But what it did was it said, okay, Denton, if you're going to, you know, ban fracking, you need to calculate for us exactly how much in lost production tax revenue, you know, the state is going to have to deal with as a result of your action. And then you're going to have to come up with that revenue elsewhere and then, you know, compensate the state for that lost revenue. And so I think that was, you know, certainly a very interesting way to perhaps address the issue. But as I said, it ultimately was not the one that the Texas legislature opted to go for.
Well, probably just having that topic kind of on the table as that bill was proposed, should scare a few communities, because while that bill didn't pass this time, it could have passed.
Sure, and you know, you do raise a good point about the wear and tear on the roads and things of that nature. What the Texas bill, the Texas now law does, is it says that there is still activity associated with oil and gas extraction that counties municipalities can regulate, and those are what they call above surface activities. So that would be the traffic, the wear and tear on the roads, some of the noise pollution, and things to that extent. We've seen preemption regarding the oil and gas industry occur in states across the country. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are by no means the first states where these sorts of tensions have arisen. And really what the courts, and speaking generally here, of course, but really what the courts have determined is that municipalities can help or can regulate the quote-unquote where of where fracking takes place. And states generally can have the exclusive authority to regulate the how. And so by where we mean, zoning laws and ordinances and those sorts of restrictions. So a municipality, for instance, can say, we don't want the oil and gas industry drilling in a residential area. But the how, in terms of, exactly how the fracking is done, is generally left up to the states. However, as I said, those above-surface activities, such as the traffic, the noise, the dust pollution, et cetera, we've seen the courts, in some instances, allow municipalities to continue regulating those features of drilling.
Yeah, and as I wrote in my column, that the Texas law and the Oklahoma law limits what the municipalities can control. It doesn't eliminate what they can control. So they do still have that ability. John, we've got about a minute left. For our listeners, tell us, why is ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, why are you all even looking at this issue?
Well, I mean, again, like I said from the outset, ultimate political authority, rests in the states. And, as an organization that is made up of state lawmakers, I think naturally you would see a number of our members take an interest in ensuring that their states can continue to, be good hosts for various business enterprises and opportunities. And we do expect to study this issue further and perhaps even draft some model language based on the Texas law at our upcoming annual meeting this summer. So we will certainly be making a little bit more news on that front as well.
Great. John Ike from the American Legislative Exchange Council, thanks for joining us. That wraps it up for this week's edition of America's Voice for Energy. Please join us again next week on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.